It was the very witching hour of night that Ichabod pursued his travel homeward. The sky grew darker and darker as one by one the stars winked out their lights. Driving clouds obscured the moon from sight. Never had the schoolmaster felt so melancholy, so utterly alone. And the nearer he approached the hollow, the more dismal he became.
Good morning. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little Legend of Sleepy Hollow to get us started this morning as we indulge ourselves in the best scary Halloween reads. We're forgetting about the candy and the black cats, focusing strictly on books, the kind that completely creep you out, maybe enough to leave your hallway light on. From Edgar Allan Poe to the latest in vampire fiction, we're going to try to give you some good suggestions to keep your literary taste satisfied this Halloween. Our guest this morning is Becky Spratford. She's Reader's Advisory Librarian at the Berwyn Public Library in Illinois and co-author of the book Horror Reader's Advisory, The Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. And later on this morning, we'll be taking your calls and emails at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234 or talk@wpr.org. You can tell us about your favorite scary reads and what ingredients you think make the best haunting literature. And Becky Spratford, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Well, you keep a blog about the best scary reads. How do you know when you've just read the perfect scary book?
That's a really good question, because what scares people is completely subjective, and it matters on, you know, what is bothering you at that moment in your life. But really, the way you know, at least I know, that a book is a great scary read is if it hits you in your gut. Horror is all about how it makes you feel. So if you read a book and you feel anxious and unsettled while you're reading it, and most importantly, if you've closed it up, and you still feel that way, that is a great, great read. You mentioned about keeping your light on. If you have to keep the light on, the book's done its job. It needs to stay with you.
What is the last really good scary book you've read?
Oh, the last. I read quite a few of them. I actually have two to pick right now. There's a book that was very popular this summer called The Passage by Justin Cronin. And it's a fat 700-page book. It was on a lot of people's must-read this summer list. That book was terrifying, and more importantly, there's going to be two more. It's a book about something that you feel like could happen. There is some sort of strange virus found in the Amazon that the U.S. government brings up to a bunker in Colorado. They are, for years, honing the virus down so that they can use it as a weapon. It's so scary. They're taking people off death row to use to experiment with it. And then they get it to the point that it's perfectly weaponized. And, of course, the people who have been given the virus have turned into vampire-like creatures. They escape. And the book fast-forwards over 100 years to when, or about 100 years, to when the North America has basically been taken over by these vampires, and there's very few people left. And those few people go out and try to, you know, save the world. Scary.
Yeah, I have to say, I read the synopsis of that one, and I was completely creeped out.
Yes, and it's a nice mix of what's happening now in horror literature, where you're sort of putting a little bit of realism into the story, enough to get it to be believable, and then going off into what we call in the library world sort of a speculative world, where, like fantasy, where it couldn't really happen, but just enough that you're scared. The other thing that's really important for a horror book to have is characters you really care about, and this book, The Passage, does. It really does. If you don't care about the characters, I like to say, then why do you care that they're being chased by monsters? It's just not scary.
Well, and it sounds like it has some of that Cormac McCarthy post-apocalyptic feel that The Road has, too.
It does, and post-apocalyptic is very popular right now in horror books. This idea of, you know, the world's coming to an end, and there's a monster there. Let's figure it out. The Road doesn't have the monsters. It just has, you know, there was some sort of catastrophic event, and the world has been destroyed. So you add into it some vampires that are smart and hunting people. These are not, by the way, your Twilight, you know, sexy vampires. These are scary.
What do they look like?
Oh, gosh. It's sounds like they look like these sort of bat-like. They're very, very black and dark. They have sort of a zombie quality to them, too. They sort of just roam around. Their humanness is pretty much gone. They look like a humanoid creature. And they don't like light, so that's how these people arm themselves, by keeping light on and by doing all their stuff during the day. You can tell they used to be human, and they still walk on two legs, but they can move very quickly. Some of them can almost fly. They hang out in trees. Yeah, they're very scary. Another great book I just read, two actually, graphic novels are really doing a great job of having horror stories right now. And really, you know, you can't talk about horror without talking about Stephen King. But he just published his very first graphic novel that he wrote. Now, a lot of his books have been turned into graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
The Stand is a famous one that's been turned into a graphic novel. But working with some other people, he just published a first volume of a graphic novel called The American Vampire. He's with Scott Snyder, is writing the story with him. This is great. It is scary vampires again. It is the America West. It's where this new breed of vampire is born out of the American West. So you have this sort of Western feel to the story. And then it flash forwards to the story's present, which is 1925 Hollywood, which is a little bit creepy in terms of the movie business as it is there. And this new form of American vampire does not need to worry about light. His only weakness is the new moon. So it's really scary, a vampire that can go during the day. But on top of that, we also have the hottest name in horror right now is actually Stephen King's son, Joe Hill, who has become very famous for his novels, the first one being Heart-Shaped Box, which was a traditional ghost story. He won a lot of awards for it, both horror awards and general, like, thriller literary awards. He's great. He is the best horror writer right now, and he's capturing that feeling, that emotional pull, and he's sort of pushing the edges.
Does his writing sound like his father's writing?
You know, it's interesting. People have said they feel like it's similar. It's a little bit different. I mean, he's only written two full novels and a short story collection, but where he's really showing how he kind of hits on the same feelings as his father is in his graphic novel series called Lock and Key, which is already on its third printed volume. It comes out in comic book all year round, but you'll find it at the library or the bookstore in the bound volume. And this is similar to his father in that it's in New England. It takes place in an old house with a family, and these kids are the reason you read the story. The family has been the victim of a terrible tragedy. The father was killed by a former student of his, and they moved back home to this old ancestral home in New England, somewhere in Massachusetts on the beach. And it turns out, they don't know this right away, but their father was not killed by a random guy. It was actually a supernatural monster that's been trying to get this family for centuries. And this house, the reason it's called Lock and Key, they're the Lock family, L-O-C-K-E, and their house is filled with all these keys that an ancestor has created that do crazy things. And each book focuses on a key. My favorite is the second book in which the key opens your head, literally. And you can see inside your head. And one of the characters, the daughter, chooses to pull fear out of herself so she won't be afraid anymore. Hmm. And just the implications that continue through that book and the next book of what does it mean to not have fear? This is one of the best horror stories, and it's continuing, that's out there. It hits at, you know, these supernatural monsters stalking a family. There's this haunted house aspect. There's these children fighting against an evil force. They're extremely likable. You just want these kids to be okay and have a normal life.
What do you think it is about why we enjoy horror books so much? And I guess horror movies, but I mean, in reading books, it's happening right there inside your own head. In a way, it's more intimate than a movie could be. What do you think it is about why we're attracted to books like this?
You know, I just think that people, you know, you don't want to say it out loud, but you really like to be slightly scared. the way a horror book, also besides the fact that people enjoy being scared, we're telling stories around campfires, you know, when we're little. Kids love, my children are reading a whole bunch of scary stories right now because of Halloween, and although they're getting freaked out, they're also enjoying it. I've also noticed, though, that horror books provide a safe exploration of sort of that dark side of life.
Yeah.
You can look at the dark side of humanity, the dark side of the world safely, both in a film or in a book, because you can push pause, you can stop it, you can close the book and go away. But there is sort of this underground, ooh, this is sort of illicit and interesting. It's also been seen that people like horror because it's a place where they can face their own fears. I've said this before, but, you know, as bad as things are happening to you right now, it cannot be worse than a zombie chasing you down a dark alley. You know, it just sort of puts things in perspective for you.
Right. I guess we all have metaphorical zombies chasing us down dark alleys, and if we think of it that way, maybe we can defeat them.
We can, or we at least, you know, have a respite from it. And that's another thing, that horror definitely, I mean, all fiction, whether it's in film or in print, does provide you escape from life. I mean, that's one of the fun things about it. It's an escape. And a horror movie or book provides you with an escape from your real horrors in your life, sort of a break from it. And also, you know, I can't think, this can't be underestimated either, this last point. Horror depends on a supernatural aspect. If it's just a serial killer story, that's more of what we call psychological suspense. It's got a real person out to get you, which is very scary. But true horror has a supernatural aspect. And honestly, that does validate a lot of people have a belief in the supernatural. And reading stories about ghosts and especially something like the Amityville Horror, which is a famous classic horror book, which has its basis in, quote-unquote, a true story of a haunted house. That really, people like that. It's this validation of your belief in the supernatural.
We had an email here from Stephen Hudson who wanted to bring up Coraline, Neil Gaiman's book and movie. He says it's terrifying no matter one's age, according to my wife.
I think that's a great example. Neil Gaiman is an amazing writer at being able to capture sort of these universal fears people have and put them on the page. And he doesn't, I've seen the movie and I've read the book. You don't need the movie to be scared. And that, again, is a very universal thing. You know, I don't like my parents. I don't like my life. Maybe there's another one. And when you look into it, maybe things aren't so bad the way you have them.
Yeah, we talked to him last week, and it was a treat to do that. And he's in your mind right now again, because he's got this idea about an All Hallows read. Can you tell us about that?
An All Hallows read?
Yeah.
In terms of?
Well, he's wanting people to exchange scary books.
He wants them to talk about scary books because we're in Halloween?
To exchange them, right, to for grown-ups to give children scary reads that they can handle, and for grown-ups to give one another scary reads, because he says we don't really have enough we don't really have any book-based holidays, so he wants us to give books along with candy.
I think that's a great idea, to be giving out books. You know, that's something that that all libraries are doing this time of year, and I get so many requests from libraries starting in September to help them with their displays. Libraries for years have known that Halloween is a holiday where people will come and read books. I get people I don't see all year round except around Halloween. They want short stories to share with their children. They want to know, they want to read that old Stephen King book they've never read. They want to reread a classic book. You know, you had that quote from The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. That book goes out more this time of year than any other time of year. And libraries do that. And so I think it would be great if people worked with their local library to maybe find a way to find the best books to share with each other. A great idea are short stories this time of year. You can find short story books, obviously, at the library or the bookstore, but they're also just classic collections. Things like, oh, my kids are reading those Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series that's pretty popular, but also Alfred Hitchcock has an amazing series that most libraries have of stories not for the nervous or more stories not for the nervous. Those are great to just go check out and share. They're going to be for a more general audience. It'd be great if people gave out books. Unfortunately, kids are expecting candy.
They might be a little bummed by a book, but maybe a piece of candy and a book.
What's scares people is so personal. It is, the work I do is matching readers to their best scary book, and to really any book, because I work with all readers. You really have to talk to people and see what scares them. Do they want a ghost story? Are they more scared of just general monsters? You know, does vampires, zombies, witches, what is it that gets you? The devil? That's a great way to find out what kind of book people would want to read, and then you can move on from there.
Well, we're talking this morning with Becky Spratford, a Reader's Advisory Librarian at the Berwyn Public Library in Illinois, and she's co-author of the book Horror Reader's Advisory, A Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. And we're happy to take your phone calls this morning. Tell us about your favorite scary books and why you think they're so particularly haunting. And what do you think it takes to make great horror literature? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I am Dracula.
Oh, it's really good to see you. I don't know what happened to the driver and my luggage and... Well, and with all this, I thought I was in the wrong place.
I bid you welcome.
A clip, of course, from the movie Dracula. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, as we talk about scary reads. With our guest, Becky Spratford, Reader's Advisory Librarian at the Berwyn Public Library and co-author of the book Horror Reader's Advisory. And we'll go to the phones right now. We have on the line Linda calling us from Milwaukee. Hi, Linda.
Hi. The kind of books you're talking about, I like them and they're scary, but like they don't really, really scare me. It's just, they're just sort of fun and weird. But for me, when I think of a scary book, when I was 12, I read Rosemary's Baby, and I mean, I was just, that book seriously disturbed me. The difference between that and the other books that I've read, of course it was partly because I was so young when I read it. I'm sure it wouldn't do the same thing now, but I just believed when I read that book that there was this huge evil force in the world, and it was just there, and you couldn't do anything about it, and it was going to get you, and oh my God.
I mean, you know, that's interesting. You bring up Rosemary's Baby. I think that and The Exorcist, which both came out in the 1970s together, are two of the scariest books I have ever read. I was asked recently on another librarian's blog what the scariest book I ever read was, and The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby are the two I mentioned. They are absolutely terrifying. They're movie versions. Are still some of the scariest movies ever made, and both were highly acclaimed. And part of the reason I think people find Rosemary's Baby particularly, and I like to pair it with The Exorcist, so scary, is what exactly Linda brought up. It has that basis in reality that, oh my gosh, you know, the world seems completely real in this story except for this one evil force that's causing all this problems. That could easily happen in your brain as you're reading it. It's still a great book.
So you mentioned the books and the movies. In that case, they were both really critically acclaimed movies as well. But if you had your way and you could only read the book or the movie, which way do you prefer to take in your horror story?
Me personally,
yeah.
I prefer reading them. I find most movie versions, those two are an exception, but I find most of them way too predictable. I have a great example. A recent horror movie in the last few years was called The Ruins. It's based on a book by Scott Smith called The Ruins also. The movie is not very good. And I'm afraid if someone sees the movie, they wouldn't try the book. That book is probably the scariest book I've read in the last 10 years. The basic storyline is some young people go to Cancun for vacation and decide to look at some Mayan ruins. And they end up, against the advice of the local Mayans, going up this hill. Well, this hill has these killer plants, basically, that are out to destroy anyone who stands on the hill. And these people don't fare very well. The book and the movie have completely different endings. The movie uses all the basic horror cliches that you would expect and that are made fun of in parody movies, such a scream or scary movie. But the book does not. The book keeps you on the edge of your seat, and quite honestly, the ending is very shocking. So I prefer the books because there's time for the story to slowly build. That's something that I love in horror, the way it slowly builds. You get all the detail, and then the last third of the book is just so fast. I always say I dare you to put it down in the last third because you can't.
Do you think there's something also about the way that it unfolds in your own head and you're the one picturing it that makes it almost scarier?
Oh, completely. It is way scarier when you're doing it yourself because you're imagining the things around the corner that the author never even brings up.
Right. Good point. So you're fleshing out things that aren't even there.
Yeah. Another interesting, though, you know, the woman brought up those things don't scare me, they're just fun. Another very popular subgenre of horror right now is comic horror, too. People really enjoy sort of stuff, the horror that makes fun of other horror. I read a really funny book a couple years ago that, again, got a lot of press. It was called Breathers, A Zombie's Lament by S.G. Brown, with an E at the end, Brown. And it is called, it's marketed as a rom-zom-com, a romantic comedy for zombies. And it really is. The thing is, though, it's still horror. It opens with a disgusting scene of this young man opening his fridge and seeing the parts of his parents cut up and in the fridge waiting to be eaten because he is a zombie. And then it goes back in time and tells you how it gets there. But overall, the focus isn't on the gross out. That's probably one of the grossest scenes. It's on the humor of what if a zombie really did live among us? And people really drawn to that also right now, more than they used to be.
Well, let's take another phone call now. We have with us Lisa from Cuba City. Hi, Lisa.
Taking my call. The book that has probably scared me the most in my entire adult life is The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova. It's a Dracula book, and I think, like the previous caller we were just talking about, that it's based in reality. It talks a lot about Vlad the Impaler, who was a real person. And it literally, 26 years old, and I couldn't read it at night if my husband was not in the house. It was so scary.
Lisa, can I ask you, did you like, though, that you couldn't read it if your husband was in the house?
I did. That's not the kind of book that I normally read. I picked it up because I like historical mystery thriller kind of books, and it's that as well. But the scary part was very unexpected for me, which I think actually once I had gotten through it and it was daylight again, made it a little bit more fun.
And I want to hit 2 points here. That hits on the fact that people don't realize it, but we do like to be a little bit scared. And The Historian also, on that same librarian website I was on where they were polling librarians to the scariest books, that Historian came up multiple times also. Again, it's not just that it's based in reality. This author is doing research into the real Dracula, quote-unquote real, and all this, you know, scary stuff starts happening also. It's also the unexpected, as Lisa brought up. She wasn't expecting to be so scared. And that's the horror books that get you when you're least expecting it, from a way that you're least expecting it, are very scary also.
Well, thanks for the call and the suggestion, Lisa. And we move to Becky calling from Janesville. Hi, Becky.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I am a big believer in the telling of horror stories, the oral tradition of them. The best book, horror book I've ever read was Pet Sematary by Stephen King, also a horrible movie, but a really good book. And there are some fun, sort of eerie stories that you can... Chris Van Allsburg wrote a few of them with, of course, great illustrations with some eerie, sort of creepy things, but not horror that you can share with young kids. And I would really suggest that because sometimes you can creep them out a little too much.
Right. So you're saying you like to find little stories to read to children.
Right.
I think that that's important because if you think about it, the earliest stories that we tell each other, you know, kids around a campfire, they're telling each other scary stories. Everybody's heard the version of, you know, the couple in the car and they hear the scratching and there's the hook left there.
Right, the babysitter with the guy in the upstairs phone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in general, studies have said that we stop reading to children at way too early of an age, that we need to keep reading to them just because they start reading themselves doesn't mean we should stop. And actually, the increase in the use of audiobooks over the last few years has been linked to that sort of innate desire we have to have someone read us a story because we have nowhere else to hear it. That's really important. And scary stories are great orally. They work really well told. I mentioned before the Scary Stories trilogy for children by Alvin Schwartz. They all have different names, but Scary Stories, More Scary Stories, there's three of them. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. They are extremely popular with children, but I also give them to families to read together. And these are creepy stories. They're appropriate for children, so there's no blood and guts and, you know, really gross-out stuff.
But what ages would they be appropriate for?
I say they're appropriate probably from, like, second grade up.
Okay.
My kindergartner's reading them, but, you know, in my house we're okay with scary books.
I bet you are.
I think if you're reading them out loud, you can read them down to any school-age child who understands that it's, you know, just pretend. But well, I've been giving them out I volunteer at my daughter's school library, and I give them out to the second grade and up. And the kids love them. They love sharing them with each other. They love reading them out loud to each other. It's a great thing to do. You know, you can have your neighborhood kids all over on Halloween. They're going to be out trick-or-treating. Why not all get together and read a scary story? Or share and tell them ones that you've made up.
Just to follow up on what you said about stopping reading to children too early, how late do you think we should be reading to children? How old should they get when still have us reading to them?
You know, and I'm not an expert in children's librarianship, but I think people want to be read to their whole lives. You know, I don't know why we ever stop reading out loud to each other. You know, my children are both readers, competent readers, but we still read out loud. We share stories with each other. You're sharing sections of books you're reading that are enjoyable out loud. Obviously, I love listening to audiobooks, too, and I'll listen to horror books, and I'll listen to regular, you know, other fiction. And it's a great experience if you just sit and listen to someone tell you a story.
Well, that's a really good idea. So Halloween would be a great time to bring that back with your older children or maybe even, you know, your family or partner.
You can always go with those, for the younger children, those Goosebump books. Those are great to read, the R.L. Stine. They're still available at every public library. You can check out any of them and share those stories. Yeah, my neighborhood's having a block party sort of campfire on Friday night, and hopefully we'll be sharing some stories there.
Well, thank you, Becky, for the call and bringing up that subject. And we move to Greg in St. Francis. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention my favorite horror author, which is H.P. Lovecraft. And I think he's a classic. And I like his stories because they the subject of many of his short stories is this, like, ancient evil of almost describable nature, and I think his stories kind of touch on the most primordial fears of human society, that, you know, the ancient waters of chaos might come up and envelop the world again. It's I just wondered if you could comment on the works of Lovecraft.
Sure, no problem. You know what? He is absolutely one of the biggest names you need to know in horror, and he is getting a big resurgence. His recently, they're re-releasing his famous biography that was written by, I'm going to get his name right, S.T. Joshi, J-O-S-H-I. He had a landmark 1996 biography on H.P. Lovecraft called just H.P. Lovecraft, A Life. It is being reissued in two volumes this year with more material added. I Am Providence, The Life and Times of H.P. Lovecraft will be the new title of that book. And he is definitely very important. What happened with H.P. Lovecraft was, in the beginning of the 20th century, ghost stories, excuse me, were the most popular thing around. The most popular author of those would be M.R. James, but ghost stories were big. H.P. Lovecraft burst on the scene with his stories, and most famously published in the pulp magazine Weird Tales, which has recently also been revived in both print and on the web. And basically his stories, yes, involve an ancient evil coming up and really wreaking havoc on the world. Generally, they are some sort of otherworldly evil, too, that maybe came from another world, an alien creature of some kind, but that has sort of settled down here in the world and causing havoc. And I can never pronounce what the tales are called, and I could tell the caller did not want to either, but they're the Kahuthu mythos is what they're go by. And it's like C-T-L-H-U. It's very weirdly spelled. But if you even do a search for that term or for Lovecraft online or even on YouTube, you find so many people who still brand new using those characters, the monsters, the terms, the themes from H.P. Lovecraft recurring everywhere, on websites, in novels, online. Every couple years, a new collection of Lovecraft stories comes out, stories inspired by Lovecraft, by all these famous current horror writers. He is definitely a name that you need to know, and if you want to read a really scary story, more appropriate only for adults, you could check out any one of his short story collections or pick one up at the library or bookstore.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Greg, for bringing up Lovecraft. And Allison joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Allison.
Hi. My favorite book is Harry Potter, and I think the reason it's scary is because of its just really creepy plot and just all the detail that J.K. Rowling puts into it. And, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought those up too, Allison. Those do borrow a lot, also from horror conventions, but they also have fantasy heavily,
yes,
through them.
Dark fantasy is a popular sort of edge of horror. I think the caller, Allison, brings up an excellent point about the details. A good horror book uses a lot of adjectives. It makes you feel sort of scared with all of your senses. These are not flowery terms, but they are just, you know, colloquial, everyday language that brings up the dark corners, the sound that isn't quite right, the smells in the air. J.K. Rowling does an excellent job with that. I have to say, you know, although Harry and his friends are good witches and wizards, there is a very evil component in that story, and witches and the occult have been a part of horror stories for thousands of years and have come up frequently. So we already have a sort of little bit of fear in our stomach when a wizard or a witch is mentioned. And we know if there's a good one, there's going to be a bad one. But Rowling does that perfectly with those dark stories that have those details that you just can't escape. Even if the story itself isn't scary at that moment, she's putting enough details in there that you know that something bad is on the way.
Well, thank you to Allison for your call. And an email here from Nancy, who says, two of the most unsettling books I've read are Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca and Henry James' Turn of the Screw. Both are books that do not give you any concrete answers and leave you wondering what was really going on. And also, Anne Rice's The Witching is a lot of fun and very original. And another one she likes is The Hound of the Baskerville, a good Sherlock Holmes thriller.
Yeah, that is the scariest of the Sherlock Holmes books. Interesting that she mentions a lot of those books she's mentioning that scare her so much are definitely on my list of books. I have a list of books I give out at Halloween time that I call horror books for the squeamish. People who think they need to be unsettled by blood and guts, and you don't. And Rebecca is at the top of that list. You know, we have Mrs. De Winter, who's the new Mrs. De Winter, and she's the recently deceased Mrs. De Winter is still sort of haunting the family. She is trusting, the husband is trusting the evil woman working for them, and Rebecca goes crazy because she doesn't know what's true, she doesn't know what's real, she doesn't know what's happening. And she mentioned Turn of the Screw also, which is an extremely scary book. You don't know what happens at the end. Really good, scary books end completely open. You don't know why there was horror, you don't know what was causing it, or if you do, you don't know how to defeat it. Another great recent example, which I would suggest to that woman who wrote in, Nancy, who really liked Rebecca and Turn of the Screw, is The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters. That book, again, there's no blood and guts, but it's extremely frightening. It's basically a historic story in post-World War II England. Our narrator is the local family doctor, and it involves the family in this rundown manor. that lives in the town. And at this time, people, sort of the landed gentry, were going out of favor in England, and it was becoming more democratic. And their house is literally crumbling, and everyone inside is going mad. And people are dying or being committed. And in the end, you have no idea if it was really a ghost, if possibly the doctor himself was behind it. You don't know. And that's what's so terrifically frightening about that story.
Rebecca is one that's been sitting on my shelf for years, and I just have never brought myself to read it, but I was reading about it for the show, and apparently it has this amazing ending.
It does, and I don't want to give it
away. Yeah, we wouldn't ask you to give it away before we read it. But
We did it in book club, actually, and about 4 or 5 years ago, when we watched, we did it as our end of the year. We always watch a movie, too, and we watched the Alfred Hitchcock movie. It's definitely worth your time. It is very creepy and scary. Again, if you don't want blood and guts, but you want to know what it feels like to be unsettled and anxious and nervous when reading, that is a great book.
Becky Spratford, our guest this morning, Reader's Advisory Librarian at the Berwyn Public Library in Illinois, and co-author of The Horror Reader's Advisory, The Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. And by the way, if you're trying to scribble as you listen to this hour to write your suggestions down, our producer Rhonda Fanning is doing that for you, and she will be posting a list of all of these books mentioned on Kathleen Dunn's Facebook page. So after the hour, feel free to check that out and get your suggestions there. And we're happy to hear from you this morning about your favorite scary reads and suggestions that you might like as well at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up next on Wisconsin Public Radio at 11 o'clock, Larry Mueller learns about a legendary Wisconsin photographer, H.H. Bennett. Larry's guest is Sarah Rath of Spring Green, Wisconsin, author of H.H. Bennett, Photographer, His American Landscapes. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm filling in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network as we talk about great scary reads for this Halloween season, something to read while the wind is whipping by your house as you get ready for trick-or-treating. And we've gotten a lot of suggestions this morning, and those will be posted on Kathleen Dunn's Facebook page after the hour. Our guest, Becky Spratford, author of Horror Readers Advisory. And we head back to the phones right now. We have Jan with us from Delafield. Hi, Jan.
Hi, good morning. I'm having so much fun listening to this. I remember as many years ago, my friends and I got into H.P. Lovecraft, and before that, of course, Edgar Allan Poe, and definitely ones to recommend to people today. First, I wanted to ask Ms. Stratford if she were to recognize this if I were to say, Berwyn.
Yes.
One of my favorite bad movie programs. And I like a good bad movie, and one about Wisconsin is The Beast of Bray Road. I was very pleased to see that they used Wisconsin license plates. They did not show wonderful panoramas of the Wisconsin mountains or the vast deserts in it, so I thought it was well filmed. But a book I enjoyed is called Fairy Tale, spelled F-A-E-R-I-E-T-A-L-E, and the author is Raymond Feist, F-E-I-S-T. He does a reimagining of fairies and fairy stories. And I enjoy that if it's well done. In fact, I like any story that's well done. And he doesn't tell the story in sort of that traditional way or the way people think of fairies as fluffy bunny kind of critters, nor necessarily in the Irish description as people think of it today. These are beings in their own right with their own agendas and their own way of life, and mixing up with them it can create a lot of trouble. So it's the kind of book to read on a dark and stormy night with the shades open so you can see the lightning and the TV off.
Fairy Tale is an excellent book. That is one of my most popular suggestions to people who want to read something that's on the edge of horror. It would be in the dark fantasy category. People forget that fairies are not Tinkerbell in traditional literature. And Fairy Tale is one of those books that pretty much every single public library has. It's considered a classic. It is dark and scary. Another newer take on fairies in that sense that was really popular, about 3 or 4 years ago, is The Stolen Child by Keith Donahue. So if you liked Fairy Tale, you should try this. The Stolen Child is also based on the Irish traditional fairy. In this case, the type of fairies who are hobgoblins, who kidnap children and replace them with themselves. It follows the story of a little boy named Henry Day, who's he's in America of Irish family, and he's kidnapped by a pack of hobgoblins who replace them with one of their own. The hobgoblin he's replaced with, or fairy as they're often known as, was himself a young boy in Germany in the 1800s. And the book goes into a lot of detail about the history of what a fairy really is in this more malevolent sense. And the story's then told from both points of view, from the Henry who was captured and becomes a hobgoblin, and also from the point of view of the boy who was a hobgoblin and becomes Henry. I know that sounds confusing, but it is very ominous in the same ways. And if you think fairies are only about, you know, Tinkerbell and flowers and pixie dust, it's a great scary story.
Well, thank you for that, Jan. And Becky, you're going to have to explain the Berwyn thing.
Sure, yeah, I meant to do that too. Sorry. So there's a famous TV show that came out of Berwyn that's on Chicago TV, and I believe it's syndicated all over. Sven Gulli is the character's name, and he basically showed bad horror movies on his show and was the host for them. And extremely famous all over. It was syndicated all over in the 70s and 80s. And it's come back. It is on, I think it's WCIU here in Chicago, and it was based in Berwyn. So we have quite a long tradition of horror in Berwyn.
Well, you're in the right spot then, huh?
There you go.
Okay, thanks, Jan. And Boyd with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Veronica, and hello to your guest.
Morning.
Well, I tuned in a little late, but I mentioned this to the producer. I guess one book you did bring up was World War Z. What I liked about that book was I would tell people who might be a little leery of reading about zombies is look at the zombies as a format. And what it's really about is our societal meltdown. And I really encourage people, if they liked reading 1984 or Brave New World, then they would like World War Z. And then the other book was an anthology. It wasn't new. It actually came out a little over 20 years ago, but it was all about Jack the Ripper. And it was edited by Garner Dazwa, and it dealt with various theories of who may have been Jack the Ripper from Sir William Gull. They had one story in there about, you know, where Jack the Ripper was a woman. But out of all those short stories, there was a story called Knuckle Bones that had to be one of the darkest stories I ever read. And really, if you had to put like an NC-17 on a short story, that would get it. It was a little morbid, but a very good anthology nonetheless. One of the better anthologies I've ever read. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Boyd.
Let's hit that on two things. World War Z is an excellent horror book that came out recently. The author's name is Brooks, and basically, for those of you who don't know the story, it's the World War Z. It's a tale of basically the zombie wars, and it is a looking back at a theoretical war that happened all over the world in which zombies came up and were defeated. And it uses primary documents and then fake primary documents and then stories from the survivors in different voices. We mentioned audio before. This is an excellent horror audio book because it uses different people and to tell the different stories. It's not just one reader. It's very compelling. Zombies, it's been talked about this year that 2010 is the year of the zombie. And whereas, you know, before it was more vampires in control. And zombies are being used as sort of a political metaphor, as the caller mentioned. You know, everything that's going wrong in society, let's tell it, you know, let's use zombies to tell that story. It's worked for many years. The idea of the zombie is sort of the people who blindly follow a dictator has been bantered around before in the past. And there's a lot of books coming out with that theme. World War Z was a couple years ago. A new one that came out this year is called Feed, F-E-E-D, by Mira Grant. It's going to be part of a trilogy, or a series, I guess. They're saying trilogy, but who knows. It is a play on words, feed. There are zombies who feed on you, but it's also about bloggers, so the whole idea of the RSS feed. In fact, the cover features the symbol for an RSS feed made out of dripping blood. And it's actually more of a political thriller than a zombie book, as the caller mentioned a little bit about World War Z. It is in the mode of a David Baldacci or Brad Meltzer, sort of, you know, the good guys fighting against the bad guys in government. And in this case, it happens to be a world in which, you know, zombies are out there. It's a cure for the common cold and the cure for cancer combined together create this situation where people can turn into zombies, unfortunately. But the story is really about the political process. It's about a presidential candidate and someone trying to undermine him using the zombie virus to create fear in people. And these good bloggers, these three bloggers, sort of uncover it and put their life at great risk to do it.
It's interesting how zombies and vampires are both so huge right now, but zombies seem to have this cultural crossover thing going for them where you see them mixed up with Jane Austen and politics and current events, and the vampires just kind of stay vampires.
You know, they do. And one of the problems with that is vampires sort of took a different track. They went more the romantic tone and vampire romances. It all started with Interview with the Vampire by Anne Rice in the mid-1970s, which is still, by the way, a great read if you want to go. And our copy is constantly checked out all year round at the library. But she started making the vampires more of the protagonist and more sympathetic. And so vampire literature sort of took that route, so that now most books, if they have a vampire, the vampire is the love interest and there's some sort of romance undertone, whereas zombies have never gone that way. There's really nothing sexy about a dead person walking around. You can't really get around it. You know, there's just not.
Nobody wants to date a zombie.
Yeah, they smell and they're decaying and they don't have a brain. So that's sort of, yes. It's been used so many times in so many different ways, and it's really getting traction in this sort of political sense now.
Well, thanks. Thanks for that call, Boyd. And to Pat with us from Springdale. Hi, Pat.
Oh, yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, uh-huh, go ahead.
Okay, hi. Ironically... I love to be scared, but it's very hard to scare me. But I do have a few suggestions. And for reading aloud, we started with my daughter when she was really young. We started with Dracula, one of my favorite scary books. And amazingly enough, she could follow Van Helsing's kind of, you know, pretty fractured English at times. She was able to follow it real well. And so we've been reading aloud as a family for a long time. And last summer when she was home for college, we read, I mostly do the reading, and my husband and daughter happily listen. I read Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter,
mm-hmm.
which is great. Really, it's got some really scary moments in it. It's really funny, too. So the reading aloud thing is a great family thing to do. You just sit down together and do a chapter, you know, whatever you have time for. It's wonderful. Just a few books that I've really enjoyed. Peter Straub, a book he wrote, If You Could See Me Now, which I found very, very frightening, in a sneak-up-on-you kind of way. Theodore Sturgeon is another author of various horror stories I think is really good. And one that really scared me, and they made a number of movies out of this, was Peter Matheson's I Am Legend.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That book is... the Vincent Price movie was horrifying, and the book was really good and really scary. So there's my suggestion.
Great. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks so much. Let's talk about a few of those. I want to go back to your Dracula comment. One of the reasons Dracula works so well being read out loud is it's a novel in letters. So it's not a traditional narrative. So reading it out loud works so well because it's individual people's stories, you know, their narrative letters. And so it really works well out loud. She also mentioned the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. That's by the same author that was just mentioned previously, too, with the that author also wrote Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which you mentioned. That Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is both funny and scary because it imagines that not only was Abraham Lincoln fighting the South, the Confederacy, but he also was a trained vampire hunter who had to kill the vampires that were attacking the country, too.
Mm-hmm.
It is scary, it is funny, and it is, you know, terrifying to think of it. And again, we're connecting horror to these political upheaval, and that's very interesting to talk about, too. And, oh my goodness, I Am Legend is definitely, definitely one of the classic stories that people need to read if they want to be scared. The caller also brought up Peter Straub, and I think it's important to mention that the sort of classic now horror writers, these writers that have been writing since the 70s and 80s, 1970s and 80s, are still putting out some really great, scary books. Peter Straub is a reliable horror writer. He writes books that are good as books and are good scares. And every year he has a new book. His newest book is getting great acclaim, Dark Matter. Other authors besides Stephen King that do this, that are really popular still, are Ramsey Campbell, who's sort of like the British Stephen King. Dean Koontz is still out there writing scary books. F. Paul Wilson has a series that begins with The Tomb that follows Repairman Jack in his sort of battle against this figure that wants to destroy the world. And that series has been going on for many years and is coming to an end, actually, in the next couple years. And another writer, Dan Simons, who has now moved into, from his traditional creepy and horror books, moved into historical tellings and adding horror. His one of his most famous ones, The Terror, takes the story of the race to find the Northwest Passage through the Arctic, and everyone died in the Franklin Expedition, and he says maybe a sea monster killed them, and tells the story that way.
Oh, this has been fabulous, Becky. Thank you so much. And what are you reading for Halloween? We've only got about 20 seconds, but what are you reading right now?
You know what? I am reading right now a book called Dweller by Jeff Strand, and he used to write more comic horror, and this is a story. It's brand new this year. It's about a relationship between a young boy and the monster who lives in the woods with him. And let me tell you, the monster may be nice to the boy, but when your best friend's a monster, bad things happen around you.
Ooh, that sounds good, too. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Lots of great suggestions. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Becky Spradford, the author of Horror Readers Advisory, The Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. She's Reader's Advisory Librarian at the Berwyn Public Library. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn, and I want to thank Rhonda Fanning for taking your phone calls this morning and wishing you a great Halloween and good luck with your spooky reads. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm.